Okay. So, yeah, well, so yeah, welcome. Yeah, welcome everybody. Yeah, we can get started on this session on artificial intelligence and the ethics of artificial intelligence. I have to confess that I'm not, I work in high energy physics. I'm not an expert on artificial intelligence myself. But as a citizen, there are, of course, issues that concern all of us. And ICTP, we have a number of people working on artificial intelligence who have thought about this. So I think these are issues that are of pressing importance about, and there are various questions, for example, about how AI is built, whether the way, because the way you train the artificial intelligence, whether it brings in some bias which favors some group of people or others, is there some accountability and remediability, who is responsible for the decisions taken by AI. There are also issues about direct consequences of AI, like safety. For example, can we have some morally acceptable rules for the behavior of autonomous agents, like a self-driving car? There are issues like that. Human-AI interaction, how it should be. Privacy, control of agency, like a surveillance. If AI is surveying all of us, how should we avoid that? And then there are, of course, indirect impacts, which are perhaps could be important for developing countries. For example, automation and job loss, labor trends, impact on democracy and civil rights. So I think these are all very urgent issues. And I look forward to hearing the opinions of this distinguished panel. So we will go in this order. I guess we'll start with Lucila Spini. She's a senior science and policy officer in International Science Council. Sorry? Oh, yes, sorry, yes, sorry. Before we start, actually, there is a short video on AI, which is
I can't seem to remember this. I was always trying. Sorry. Okay. Do you help me? Okay, it's there.
Okay.
So this is only just a very short video prepared by UNESCO, just as a, to set the scene, as we say, before we get to our panel.
This is the best part of any technology yes. related talk.
It always happens this way.
It does.
Although, yeah, we tested it.
Thank you.
So we invite you to watch the full version online.
Okay, so let's start with the first. We'll have about, 8 to 10 minutes.
Yes, let's see.
So first speaker is Dr. Lucila Spini. She's a bioanthropologist with expertise in sustainable development, science policy bridging. She has a DPhil in biological anthropology from Oxford. She has held several positions in UN system. She was an alumna of Harvard Kennedy School, and she will be talking about in and out of Africa.
Thank you very much. Before I start my presentation, I have to say I'm very happy to be on a gender imbalanced panel.
I know how you felt all these days.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you very much to UNESCO for this opportunity to participate in this panel, and thank you to all of you for finding this room on this side of the academy. I would like to start my presentation by highlighting an amazing technology. Ready? Ta-da! Some of you had a preview of this technology yesterday. This is the Acheulean Index, and actually the photo is from Marupeng, and for those of you who are not from South Africa, some of you I know are from South Africa here in the audience, is the cradle of humankind. And this is really not to get you through to all the different technological innovation within prehistory, history, don't worry, I'm not going to talk for 3 hours, but it's really to make you think that technology and artificial intelligence could actually be imported into Africa, but also could also be created in Africa. So I would like to recall the out of Africa theory of human evolution, and also how Acheulean Index, which I have a French definition in terms of name, you could date back the origins back into Africa. So I really would like to make sure you think about it when you think about artificial intelligence in and out of Africa as well. So on the basis of my experience as a biological anthropologist, but also in coordinating international science, I would like just to get you through this in and out of Africa framework in order to introduce also the other presentation. And I'm going to do that by highlighting some definition. I know some definition were briefly glimpsed in the UNESCO videos, but also going in through the perspective of Africa as a place of consumer of AI and related ethics, so consumers of a technology that is imported into Africa, but also as looking at Africa as the place where technology is also produced and related ethics. So I'm going to start with some definition, which are actually even more basic than the one highlighted in the UNESCO. I'm going to start with the definition of artificial intelligence. Non-biological intelligence, they're like, oh, great, okay, that was easy enough, isn't it? But also to highlight that there are different perspectives also on artificial intelligence. And these are the definition that, I don't know if some of you might have known this book, Life 3.0, anybody have seen this book? It's quite an interesting perspective. And I like also that they highlight the definition of friendly AI, super intelligence whose goals are aligned with ours, with human beings' goals. So just to make sure that we have a global perspective and a broad definition of artificial intelligence. Okay, no need to spend a lot of time on defining ethics. It's one of the theme of the World Science Forum. But what I would like to emphasize here is the fact that what is morally good or bad, or morally right or wrong, it really also depends on the culture. So in some culture, you might have very, very different perspectives. So it's important to keep that when we're talking about different countries and different continents, to have that perspective in mind. And of course, I'm going to define Africa because we're talking about Africa here. Don't worry, I'm not going to take you through all the country. But really, I just would like to say that we're talking about Africa. Africa is a continent. There are many different countries. And so it's important to take into account when we discuss also technology and and culture and ethics related to that. So let me start by highlighting Africa as the place as consumer, customer, beneficiaries of AI. So I've been working in international cooperation and development, international science, and usually when you know we talk about AI in Africa, we always see this sort of capacity building component to it. We bring AI, we bring technology into Africa. This is kind of the narrative that we're mostly exposed to it. And in fact, there are many different initiatives in that respect, some coming from business, like for example, the Microsoft for Africa initiative, but also coming from other international organizations, like for example, UNESCO. And so most of the time, these programs have really a technology transfer component. And sometimes I have to say that with some exception, of course, but the ethics is not taken into account. It's not imported, it's not considered in the technology transfer. And that leads also to issue of cybersecurity, on misinformation, on surveillance capitalism, which are all issue related to data. So data is at the core of this discussion. And in particular, I would like to highlight, we were actually just talking before we were getting ready for the session about the issue of data protection. So in Africa, you have some countries where there are data protection regulation in place and some were not. This is there is a reference from Deloitte studies on this. But also, it's important to understand whether there are data centers in Africa or not. And actually, it's not as frequent as we might think. So we always say data are in the clouds, it's not in the sky, they're actually physical places. And so it's important to understand also how the data is managed vis-a-vis the technology transfer into Africa. But when we bring a technology into another place, we're also bringing an extra baggage to it. Because really technology is a sociocultural artifact. So we're bringing also all the issue related to the creation of that technology. And so it's important to understand that, for example, when the technology is imported into Africa from Western countries, you're bringing different languages, you're bringing stereotypes, you're bringing religion, you bring different ethics and philosophical issues. So there are a couple of article coming up now about the issue of languages. And we had some discussion on languages also on science communication in one of the sessions here at the World Science Forum. And for example, Siri, this is a recent article, Siri doesn't speak Arabic. So that means, you know, it's an important component. And a language gives you identity, gives you a perspective, gives you also, you know, different viewpoints. So it's important to understand how we can actually also de-bias and making sure that stereotypes of other society are not brought into Africa. And I found a very interesting perspective. I was thinking about ethics, I was thinking about philosophy, and also religion. And there is a recent partnership between Microsoft and the Vatican in terms of ethics and AI. And actually there is a call open for a PhD dissertation on this. And that made me think about also how a religious perspective is also imported in different countries. So it's important to take into account all this issue that revolves around importing a technology in a different countries. Of course, last but not the least, and this is my environmental background, is that all these were Western influence brought into Africa, but the core minerals which were used for some of the technology are actually pure African and coming from rainforest. So that's all other sets of ethical issue related to it. But so I really would like to really make you think about overcoming sort of the stereotypes of the technology being imported into Africa for capacity building, for business opportunity, to overcome stereotypes, to overcome like really a perspective that we might have in some of our countries in Europe, for example. And so the importance of focusing also on education and capacity building, lifelong learning, but to look at Africa as also as producer of AI. And in this context, I would like to draw attention to one of the initiatives on by Diaspora AI, the bottom-up innovation. which is really to use different type of innovation, different types of grassroots intervention in order to make sure that everybody in the society can participate in the development of AI. Because we always need to think about that, you know, we think about of AI stealing jobs and stealing opportunity, but also they're creating other opportunities. And there's some interesting project going on related to smart city where actually technicians become really the innovators of new technique, for example, of monitoring water quality and so on. But also what is very interesting that is bubbling now is not only the develop a new technology in Africa, but also develop a new perspective, a new ethical perspective. And in particular, so I said that some, you know, if we import from Europe into Africa, we also bring our knowledge of ethical and philosophy and religion. African philosophy, wisdom, and ethics could also provide some new insight on how to better use the technology, better use AI. And in particular, there's some study now currently being done on the application. And here I also like to call for a South African example again, because the next World Science Forum is going to be in South Africa. So we all get ready for the next one. But the application, the exploration on how to apply the concept of Ubuntu, which is a philosophy that is designed for the preservation and restoration of harmony within a society. It's really, I'm human because you're human. That's, in a nutshell, what the Ubuntu philosophy is about. And their study, they're currently scholars, also at the Harvard Kennedy School, looking on how to apply that particular philosophy into the AI context. Especially because we all feel sometimes that we're becoming a digital version of ourselves. There is a commodification of our digital lives, in a way. And so to look at about, from a different perspective, to use African wisdom, African philosophy, could actually provide also other perspective in other countries. There are a lot of discussion on the digital well-being now. There is a study done by the International Network of Government Science Advice that looks at this particular issue. And so it's important to try to think ethics from a global perspective and also look into Africa for new ideas. And I'm from the International Science Council. We just released our action plan. I have a few copies. It's depicted as the black and green publication there. We are going to have different activities on the digital revolution, on AI, on big data, also related to activities in Africa. And so I encourage you also to have a look at our activities and to see whether we can define different partnership. And I hope also that this discussion will lead to different perspective in and out of Africa. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lucila. So the next speaker is Bunmi Banjo. She is an organizational psychologist and a digital transformation expert and managing director of Kuvora Incorporated. She got her master's MBA from Kellogg School of Management in Northwestern University, and she led the Google's effort to equip millions of youth with digital skills for jobs and business growth. And for this work, she was recognized as one of the most influential women in Nigeria. So, Bunmi.
Hi, everyone. Good evening, afternoon. So I'm going to try to speak a little bit about application, because I work in the private sector. A lot of what I do touching technology is really advising organizations and public sector leaders on how to incorporate technology in what they do to better achieve their goals. So I'll focus more on the sort of private sector aspect of this. And pardon me, I don't use one of these, I use a mic. Okay. There we go. Okay, so the I'll start with just what I'd call the state of play. So what's the current state of AI in Africa? What is happening right now? The first thing, I think Jenna kind of touched on this a bit, there's a lot of activity in the market. However, a lot of that activity is driven by private sector organizations, and most of the time it's by foreign organizations. So you see here, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on. Microsoft, Google, Amazon are opening large data centers across the region. They're opening research centers, innovation centers. Microsoft committed to invest in $100 million in the region this year, just focusing on innovation. Huawei is beginning to do a lot in the continent, especially in East Africa, working with the government in Kenya and Zimbabwe, for example. There's a lot of positive there. There are, of course, some concerns, but it's generally positive. It's job opportunities for a lot of young people. It's more interest for governments because they like being associated with organizations that are well-known globally, so they listen to the conversation about AI. But there's also homegrown activities as well, which is exciting. So we have, for example, here Data Science Africa. It's a large organization that was started by Africans to advance ideas and research in AI. It's across the continent. Some countries have very active groups, and they have sessions where young people will come together and challenge themselves on solving problems. And for the most part, they're making progress. Relatively new, but they're making some progress. There's also the deep learning in Daba, which actually has really gotten big in the last year. Started just 2 years ago. It's driven mostly by researchers in Kenya and South Africa, but they're looking at the entire continent. They have presence in more than 20 countries. And most recently at the conference they had earlier this year in Kenya, there were 30 plus organizations that were involved in helping them drive towards their goals. So a lot of activity and excitement going on there. And last but not the least here, Google and Facebook came together to actually develop a master's in machine intelligence program. It started in Rwanda last year and moving into Ghana this year. So there's good stuff happening in that regard. And a lot of this stuff is happening against a backdrop of a lot of change, which are mostly positive. And I think what's interesting here for me is the fact that technology changes or new technology to Africans is not as daunting or is not as intimidating as it tends to be for a lot of people, because change has kind of been the story for the last couple of decades, right? Smartphones came and revolutionized how the entire continent works. A lot of parts of the continent are just beginning to be pulled into sort of the 21st century and are learning to adapt very quickly to changes in the marketplace. People are learning to do things differently in terms of decisioning about, you know, where they shop, what they do, their day-to-day activities, transportation, and so on. So it's sort of people are open to these changes. It's fast urbanizing. Urbanization rate in Africa is higher than anywhere in the world. There's rapid population growth, which could be challenging, but there's also an opportunity there to leverage AI in a lot of the to address a lot of the potential challenges before they become problems. There's also a lot of infrastructure improvements, which means, for example, people can better leverage what's happening in technology. For example, there are areas that are just beginning to get access to technology, which means now they can get phones because they can charge their phones. When I worked at Google, in fact, that was a huge problem for places where they were ready to use the phones, but they're like, I can't charge it, and I'm not going to work, you know, 3-5 miles to charge it. So you know, just the fact that people are getting access even to something as basic as electricity is increasing how quickly they're coming online. There's a lot of early stage investment funding. I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but we have a really active startup base, a lot of young people starting to build new businesses, leveraging technology in those businesses. Smartphone use I touched on, high penetration there. Well, penetration is relatively low, but it's growing fast. And then the energy and the talent of the young people, I think, is the story of Africa. Our population is very, very young. 60% or so of them are below 25 years old. But within that group, there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot of energy, there's a lot of optimism about the future. And what that means is that they're very open and hungry to change and are taking advantage of technology, and we're seeing the benefits of that. And along those lines, there are some really exciting pockets of success, so I'll just share very briefly some of the things that are happening within AI. I've highlighted here the countries that are sort of at the forefront at the moment. In the West, those are Ghana, Nigeria, Kenya in East Africa, South Africa, and Egypt. So I would say those, in my view, are sort of the top tier in terms of countries that are leading the way in AI. However, one thing I think these countries do have in common is it's the people, not necessarily government or policy. So it's private sector, it's individuals that are starting businesses that are really taking advantage of technology. Behind that, there's another group of a few countries that are really driven by policy and government. So Rwanda, for example, is one where the government is really focused on trying to ensure that technology is being used to develop the country. So I'll put that in sort of a second tier where we might actually see more growth because of the focus of government. So Rwanda is there. I'll say to an extent Tanzania as well. Zimbabwe to some extent as well. There's a lot of activity there. In terms of sectors, places where we see the impact of AI and technology in general right now would be healthcare, finance, and transportation, or logistics, really. In healthcare, there's drones that are being used to develop blood and healthcare supplies to rural areas. There's real-time information or managing information that's being used to treat people that don't have access to doctors. One thing that I think is unfortunate is the ratio of medical practitioners to the populace is really quite poor in the region. So, you know, you have in situations where there's like one doctor to thousands of people, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people. But what's happening now is that there's a lot of sort of small startups trying to test out, okay, can we use real-time information to get where are symptoms, or what are symptoms people are going through, and is there a way that a doctor can deal with 50, 100 people at the same time using mobile phones, right? So there's interesting activity going on there. Also, access to finance is another one. So one of the reasons why a lot of businesses struggle to grow, of course, is that they can't access finance. And a lot of times this is very micro businesses. They don't necessarily, you know, they don't even bank for the most part. Almost 70% of the population is unbanked. So a lot of traders might not even own a bank account. Talk less of going to a bank to get a loan. However, there are a lot of startups now working in that space to use technology to better make credit decisions and give people micro loans that they can use to grow their business. And then there's just some examples of some of these organizations in case you want to look them up. They're really doing quite exciting stuff. Of course, there are causes for concern. Jana touched on some of them. I think they're not necessarily different from the concerns we have with technology and AI around the world, but I think where they vary a bit will be the impact, the possible sort of negative downside if they're not checked. So starting with market challenges, one thing is, unfortunately, especially the small ones, the large organizations, most of the time can access talent globally, right? So if they can't find local people to do certain things, they'll bring in folks from other countries. But the smaller companies can't afford international talent, right? So they struggle a lot to hire people with the right skills locally. Data scientists are almost impossible to find. And even though groups like Data Science Africa, Data Science Ghana, Nigeria, there's a few of them, are really trying to fill that gap, it's still a very wide chasm. So it will take some time to fill. And education in generally has not made the transitions necessary to provide that kind of talent to the market. So you still have very sort of old traditional approach to post-secondary education, which are not necessarily preparing people for these opportunities that are in the market. Private sector, again, is really doing a lot of work to try to fill that. The other thing is, so even though I mentioned before, smartphone penetration is growing, we still have more than 60% of the population that are not online, completely offline. And even though there's a lot of activity there and there's continuous growth, it's still, the region is by far the fastest growing in terms of things like Android penetration. But in the meantime, we don't have Afrikaans data, for example, right? Because we've not been doing things online. So if you're developing an AI model, you're probably going to be overrepresented when it comes to folks from other parts of the world, even if you're African. And so that's a big struggle. And then to that point of underrepresentation, it's not just the data that's underrepresented, it's also the people. So there's a lot of international conversations. There's this conference here, for example. There are probably many Africans that would have loved to be here, but they couldn't get a visa. This happens all the time. And there was a big one that made the news earlier this year, where more than 100 researchers across Africa would not be given a visa to go to Canada for an important conference where a lot of the advances in technology and AI will be discussed, right? And they're being left out of those conversations. On the data side, this part for me, I think, is really important because it's not just important for Africans, it's important for Black people globally. And you know, Jenna talked about just culture and all of that that will be left out. But there's just simple things like, I'm sure you've seen the headlines of AI bias when it comes to hiring, right? Because there's certain imagery that is not included in the machine models. And so this continues to be a concern. There was one example we had that was directly at Google a couple years ago, where the machine had kind of learned what a wedding picture looked like, right? The wedding picture is a woman in a white gown and a guy in a tux, right? But that's actually not reality for a lot of people in Africa and a lot of places as well. And so things as simple as that is when you don't see yourself represented or recognized, it becomes a major issue. It affects a lot of other things going forward. And then on the regulatory and structural concern side, this is similar around the world, but I think the impact could be potentially bigger. So negative AI is something I think we all worry about. We all worry about the capability to drive disinformation, for example, fake news, or like, you know, and of course this is a worry in Africa as well, but I think it's even a bigger worry because a lot of the sort of setup or the foundational issues are already deep. And so you have a situation where you could potentially use technology to make them worse. So a lot of our democracies, for example, are still quite young. And if you have a situation where, you know, nefarious, you know, folks are kind of trying to share disinformation, it's relatively easy to do that just on WhatsApp, and that happens a lot already. Along those lines, Africa is a very ethnically diverse region, the most ethnically diverse region in the world. Although there's a history of getting along, there's also a lot of history of strife, and those differences or tensions could actually be further stoked with AI. And so that's, I think, something that sort of is worrying. Same thing with religious tensions and things like that. The other issue is that our governments are just not acting quick enough. AI is not being integrated into sort of how business is done, for lack of a better term. In some markets, you have, I think it's in UAE, they actually have a minister for artificial intelligence, right? You can't find that anywhere in Africa. We don't have, even our ICT ministries are not necessarily incorporating advances in technology in their conversations, talk less of policies and things like that. So that's a concern. Legal frameworks are often missing across the region. And this is big because what are the rules, to the next point, what are the rules of the game? So we have a lot of private sector organizations that may mean well coming into the market, investing a lot of funds into the market, but who guides what activities they get involved in and what they don't get involved in? Who makes sure that we get the benefits in the region of the work they're doing? And there are also some concerning ones when you look at the ethics side. For example, Huawei on behalf of the Zimbabwe government is collecting facial recognition data for all the citizens in the country. But who owns that data? Where is it stored? What happens with it? What can they or can they not do with it? And who makes sure that they're not doing with it what they're not supposed to do with it? There's just no clear guidelines on what's happening there. So it's a bit concerning. But while we still have all those concerns, I think most of the region is focused on the potential benefits. And so I'll just close with, I think, the places where we really, really can benefit from AI. And again, there's a lot of activity happening in these areas, but I think we'll continue to see more. So examples here in agriculture, we have organizations using AI to recognize crop diseases before they actually appear, using just the data they have. Also, along those lines, ensuring that the time it takes for goods to get from the farm to the market is shortened. About 40% or so of farm produce is lost in that process. So just being able to increase the yield and then being able to increase the sort of conversion amounts is huge for farmers and huge for the market. A lot of the governments actually spend a lot of time funds importing food. So this potentially could have a huge impact on their countries. Healthcare is another area. Same benefits as we're seeing around the world in terms of scanning and imaging and diagnostics. We're seeing that, and there's a lot of opportunity for that. In public services, transportation, urbanization, and making sure it's better organized, for example. Financial services, huge, huge, huge opportunities there still. We have potentially 40 million or so micro businesses that could potentially be doing better if they could access finance, and potentially this is something we can really leverage for that. And finally, protecting endangered species. A lot of countries benefit from tourism, and this is affecting them. The issue with poachers is affecting them. And so in Nigeria, we don't have any tourism there. In Rwanda and South Africa, AI is actually being used to track rhinos, for example, to make sure that, you know, they don't get in the hands of poachers. So it's a positive story, I think, even though we have some concerns. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Bunmi. So the next speaker is Dorothy Gordon. She's a development economist, trained as a development economist, and currently the chair of Information for All program at UNESCO, and a board member of the UNESCO Institute for Information Technologies in Education. And she has worked in the field of international development and technology, including her work as a founding director general of the Ghana India Kofi Annan Center for Excellence in ICT. Okay.
Thank you. Great. For the past 2 years, I think I've been speaking on artificial intelligence and its implications at least once a month at international meetings. In technology, we have something called the hype cycle. Just skip to the hype cycle. Yep.
Still?
Yep.
This one?
Yes. And can you do full screen? So what happens with a technology? I think many of you work in technology, and you know that what happens is we have a whole lot of visibility. Everybody thinks this is going to be the silver bullet that is going to save everyone. And everyone thinks that the technology is going to be the best thing in the best of all possible worlds. Then we hit this trough. And this is where we are today when it comes to artificial intelligence. With all the concerns about surveillance capitalism, about the involvement of Cambridge Analytica in elections all around the world. Now we have people really concerned. What does this mean for our societies? Who has values? Who's going to define those values? And what is worrying people a great deal is the fact that before, the average citizen would complain about government. You'd say, oh, I'm being oppressed by my government. They're infringing on my civil liberties. But today we have a situation where there are a number of big companies that are actually in control of this space. And none of those companies are African. They are either American or they are Chinese. And even in Europe, we find Europeans are at a great disadvantage because Europe continues to work on artificial intelligence at the national level. And there are only very few projects that integrate across Europe. And therefore, Europe is finding that it cannot compete in this space. I've been fascinated to find out that speaking to some of the top professors in the area of data science, that they are very concerned that they are not able to train new people up because they don't have access to the kind of data that the big companies have that allow them to develop the kind of sophisticated products that are being developed. So that is why we are in that trough. And I am today the chair of UNESCO's Information for All program, IFAP. And when IFAP was founded in 2001, people were concerned about digital divide. Here is this great technology that is coming to save the world, but then Africa and different other disadvantaged groups are not able to make the best of it. And so we were concerned about how are we going to build an inclusive knowledge society. And the idea is bring everybody around the table so that we discuss these issues in depth. Make member states more aware of this. Have capacity building programs around this. And then today we ask ourselves, but it's moving so fast. Are those things actually going to be solutions? Do we have time to wait for that? Is it a question? I mean, I've been fascinated this morning listening to people talking about training scientists so that they have more awareness of ethics. I've been on panels where they've said the person developing the software has to learn agile development. You know, in agile development, you go out, you launch quickly, you test, you look for all the unintended consequences of the solution and figure out how you can avoid them. But as has already been said, when it comes to ethics, we have no absolutes, and I'm very fortunate that I actually have a degree in philosophy because I realize that many of the people discussing ethics don't have any background in philosophy. And that means that we as human beings decide, we are the ones who are going to decide what is morally acceptable and what is unacceptable. And what we are seeing today is that norms are shifting and people are becoming very uncomfortable with that shift in norms. But even as we see a generational gap, for example, between how privacy is seen by those people like my dear friend Ms. Okeyo over there, who will be speaking shortly, how she would see privacy, I hope I'm right, and then somebody like me, how I would see privacy, I think that all of us agree that we are very uncomfortable if, say, a political system is being manipulated by non-state actors. When I say non-state actors, that means that it is not another nation state that is interfering. It could be a private sector company, it could be a group of individuals, but the technology is powerful enough that it would allow that. And we are saying that we don't want that. But the thing is that the technology is out there. Once the technology is out there, and whether it is on the dark net, deep net, or you know, Silk Road 2.2, the fact is that the technology is out there, and anybody who's looking for it can access it. So what do? Do we become so protective of ourselves that we say we are blocking all innovation? And I think that these are some of the big questions that we have to ask ourselves as a global society. So I find it difficult to talk about artificial intelligence for Africa because this is a global issue. And there are no global norms. There are no global norms. It depends on which culture that you are coming from. But it means that we are going to have to, together as a society, agree and build those norms. And at the same time, we don't have the time that it would take with a normal multi-stakeholder process to achieve that. So what do? Any ideas? I hope that the audience will have ideas when I finish speaking, because it's not that easy. I mean, we keep going for these meetings, and the last meeting, which was, I think, 2 days ago, what's the day? I think Thursday in Paris, we had the OECD coming out, oh, we are adopting ethical principles of AI. We had UNESCO come out, we are adopting ethical principles of AI. And then from Arab states, we had ASESCO coming up, we are also developing ethical principles for AI. And in the meantime, who's doing the things? Those things, who hires the scientists? You know, here it's been so interesting for me because they're talking about scientists developing ethics. But scientists are funded by people and they work for companies or they work for the state. And how they will work will not be determined by the individual scientists unless you're going to say that each scientist is going to resign on principle if they're being asked to do something that they are not comfortable with. So I think that we have to become very realistic about it. It's a big issue. Let me go back to IFAP. So we were not worried about surveillance capitalism with data capture, addiction to social media, election meddling. All of those things are new. But the principles on which IFAP was founded, that is a respect for the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that still holds. And if you look at the Secretary General's paper on how the UN is going to engage around these technologies, that is the bedrock of it, that we will respect those principles that are enshrined in the Universal Charter. And then with IFAP, we look at what is the ideal kind of knowledge society that we're looking for. We are looking for a society that respects freedom of expression, universal access. So things like deciding, how can I put it? That all the issues that come with the fact that you could have a government in Africa using a solution that is based on data that has nothing to do with their population. Yes, that is a huge problem. Another problem is, of course, that they don't have the budget that would really should be spent on something like that. Am I over time? You're looking at me? Okay, round it up. Well, I was just getting going. Okay, so let me round it up quickly, and I'm sure when they have questions that we can get into some of those issues. So let me make a few recommendations in terms of things that we know that we can do, even as we grapple with all these problems. And as I said, my perspective has been global, but within Africa itself, we have places like South Africa, where a lot of the population is already using the technology. And then we have places like Niger, where they are not, and it's quite difficult to access the technology. But one of the areas, for example, that IFAP worked on is that area of violent extremism. And we will find that even in a country where they are supposed not to have access, the technology is being used to profile people in such a way that they can be encouraged and recruited for these kind of acts. So the first thing I think which is clear is, apart from training scientists in ethics, let us train everybody in how to manage technology negotiations better, so that we encourage the development of more balance when it comes to our civil and our private sector partnerships. We definitely need more research to understand the social implications of technology. And this is something that I've been amazed to find out is a general problem globally, not just in Africa, but definitely needed in Africa. In Africa, I'm glad Bumi mentioned all the things that are happening in terms of jobs. And yes, there is a growing local ecosystem of innovation happening. And I work with them a lot. But let me just say that these are small companies. As soon as they get to a certain level, they get swallowed up by Google or by Facebook or by whoever. Lucia mentioned Europe. Africa is really not bothered about the West these days. China is having far more impact. And those partnerships with China trains thousands, hundreds and thousands of Africans every year.
Also through Europe.
Yes. What?
You
mean the Europeans are going to be trained by China?
No, China also passed through Europe in order to train Africa.
Well, all right. But let me just round up saying that what we really want when it comes to Africa is, let us avoid creating new dependencies as a result of the technology. So our leadership has to become more aware. And these are the kind of things that IFAP can do at the level of the UN, and engaging with member states, engaging with civil society, and engaging with the private sector. Thank you. Sorry, I went.
Okay, thank you, Dorothy. Next speaker is Stephanie Okeyo. She's a microbiologist and a science communicator. She founded Under the Microscope. It's a platform in 2018, which is a platform to promote creation and dissemination of science content, particularly in Africa. So, Stephanie.
Thank you. Hi. A little bit of energy. Hi. So, to talk on youth perspectives on AI in Africa, and I found that's a very tricky question, especially with three words in that sentence. First of all, youth. It's a group that you never know what's coming, so they're always evolving. And there is perspective, and you get a cocktail of people's interpretation, people's understanding, and there is Africa. Africa is diverse. In a day, there are around 1,500 to 2,000 languages spoken in a day. There are more than 50 countries, and let's not even get into the cultural differences. But I'll do my best to make something meaningful out of this cocktail. A few things about me is that, first of all, I fall in the group of the confused, evolving people. I'm a youth. And Second, I'm proud to be African. And the thing that is, we should ask ourselves, we are always a back to basics person when you, especially in communication within science, technology and innovation, is the importance of back to basics. What is AI? And what do people understand AI is? Because you'll be shocked when you go to some areas, people just think of AI as machine learning, think of AI as robotics. And we've had AI since the 1950s. It's just that the level at which we're using AI is at a very complex and in our day-to-day life. And to me, AI is, it's in general, you'll find this description in many places, broad science whereby you're able to use machines or to make machines do have human abilities in terms of thinking, and how they interpret things, how they analyze things. And with that, we come to the question of, okay, what we're speaking of the youth, what is important for this group? And in this discussion, youth are categorized 15 to 35 years. You can debate about that, but for now, we're taking 15 to 35 years. And what is important for such a group is, first of all, people want quality education. And it can be informal and formal, but quality, access to quality education. Two is jobs. It can either be self-employed, employed, but in Africa we see a lot of self-employment. And people want a comfortable life. Social life is a big aspect of young people. People want comfort, people want diversity. And if you look at the topic, is why is AI of interest in Africa? Why is there so much hype that future of Africa is in AI? It's a leaphole to prosperity. It represents an opportunity or a chance to tackle and be a tool for growth, for development, to reduce inequalities, especially in sectors such as health, financial services, just mentioned by the previous speakers, and public, streamlining also government. And the challenge you see when it comes to now perceptions of diversity of perceptions is, the main question people will ask is AI for good? At the end of the day, that is the bottom question people ask. Is AI for good? And particularly if you put a lens in Africa, it will be, okay, the question that comes out is labor and ethical questions. And they root from, we see gaps in connectivity with the broadband, definitely with AI, that's a big issue, and readiness in the education system, and accessibility to digital data. And in the labor, AI makes us lose jobs. Why don't we shift the conversation to AI? How does AI make more profit for us? And if you go to the morality of it is, with connective science, what does it mean for an industry such as gambling, which is a big issue in Africa? You look at issues such as pornography industry, which is still a big issue in Africa. That's just to name a few. But my main issue in terms of interacting with different groups of people, because that's the beauty of what we do, is everyone's truth is different. Is what you, and as a scientist personally, is when you're looking at an issue, when you're doing a diagnosis, sometimes you get so caught up with what are the symptoms, what are the factors, who has been affected, and you forget to do research on what exactly is the parasite, the virus, the structure of it. And we need to understand what is the structure of AI, what is the core of AI, and it is data. In the 19th century, oops, you can correct me if I'm wrong, oil was the new thing, was the money bag. But in this century, it's data. Data is the new oil. And if you look in Africa, Africa presents, it's a gold mine for data. because their system's not been put in place. They have not, we're going to discuss that in detail, but it's a goldmine for data whereby systems have not been put in place. And if you look how AI operates, it's a self-teaching algorithm that produces new data. And that new data is intellectual property. Who is in charge of that new data? And who is even providing that data? Because the African youth, even as we speak and try to tackle ways of how to solve this issue, is they have data, African youth data has been misused, and it's still being misused. And it's not by parties within Africa, it's by international players and those non-state players. That as we continue trying to figure out and play catch up and define ethics and all these issues, is that data is being exploited. And African countries have not put in structures for private data privacy laws. And for us young people, I think it starts there. What are the data privacy laws? What is the system? Because even if you look under African Union, there is no blanket regulatory body for data laws, for personal data privacy. And AI data, you might look at me, but generally, and also, even if there is, there's not so much awareness. Because at the end of the day, the people need to know how to go about it. And just for me, this topic brings about question of responsibility, transparency, incorruptibility. There's so much TT, but bear with me. And predictability, which is key, and a player in this game. Because at the end of the day, as we are saying, we are going to unknown territory, and data, for me, still is the oil here. And it's being collected, and people are not, there's not so much sensitivity and awareness in that area amongst young people. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie. So the last speaker is Yana Elbaba. She has two masters in engineering management and sustainable development, and she's currently program specialist for social and human sciences in the UNESCO regional office in Cairo. And she's responsible for regional and national programs in bioethics and ethics of science and technology.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'll be brief. I know we need to open the floor for discussion. I hope I can bring that back. I don't know with this.
Okay, it's also in the language that I don't understand.
All right, so the speakers before me have highlighted how much AI holds opportunities, but at the same time, the challenges that it could pose, notably in the area of ethics. So no wonder, given the opportunities and the challenges, how much UNESCO is currently interested in AI and is really involved, because UNESCO is in effect interested in all that affects the mind, from education to culture to the sciences. So the ethics of AI touches a lot on all of these issues. Let me start by a quick quotation by our DG, Ms. Audrey Azoulay, who just called for solutions that make sure that I mean, AI is an opportunity for humanity, that it is passed down to the generations in a more just and more peaceful and more humanistic way. So, as I said, AI is definitely relevant to UNESCO's mandate in the various sectors. Education. I'm surprised, actually, that education was not mentioned as an area where AI can play a big role. I see AI in education will transform education. There are a lot of opportunities for improving education, but also our education system needs to change to benefit from AI. We have to learn how to learn, not just to learn. In the area of culture, of course, also the examples are many. We need to make sure that not any culture will be marginalized through AI, and this is actually was brought up with the speakers before me. In the area of CI also, of course, the progress in AI will affect issues of freedom of expression, access to information, etc. So you can see definitely the linkages with the various mandates of UNESCO. So how is UNESCO addressing this? So the issue is definitely global, as was said also by the previous speakers, and the reflection on that needs to be global. So definitely UNESCO will provide the best global arena for or platform for such a discussion. And at the same time, what we want to ensure is that we are inclusive in our in this platform for reflection to make sure that all the different stakeholders are involved. What is the approach that UNESCO is taking for that? I mean, UNESCO is also looking at this AI issues from the perspective of its global and cross-cutting priorities. So Africa, we have this as our global priority for all our programs, so which is to make sure that Africa will benefit from this new technology and also prevent any negative impacts on Africa from AI. The issue of gender, I guess, also was brought up. We need to make sure that the AI will not entrench further the gender disparities, but on the contrary, it could be an opportunity to bring any disparities to light and will allow us to address them better. Youth also was mentioned. We need to empower youth to make sure they benefit also from, and they lead. They are in the driver's seat of this new technology. So what platforms can we open up for them to do that? Finally, inequality also as a cross-cutting theme across UNESCO's work. So how do we make sure that we bridge the divide between the haves and the have-nots of this technology? How we make sure that it contributes actually to bridging this divide? We've been working on AI for quite some time in various ways. So you may have heard of the World Commission on the Ethics of Science and Technology, COMEST, under UNESCO. So COMEST is concerned with all the issues of ethics of science, and they have issued a series of reports actually on things that relate to AI, and, such as robotics, Internet of Things, and they are doing also further work to study really the ethics of AI, so these reports are available. We have been also doing quite some debates, opening up, providing platforms at the global but also at the regional level to address, to because we need that societal dialogue. We all listen to the opportunities and the challenges, so the only way is to have this societal dialogue if we really want to benefit. So we had one, for example, last year in Marrakesh, in Morocco, in Geneva at the World Summit on the Information Society. There were others, and we will continue to do that over the coming year. Finally, we have also some information and educational videos. We saw a blurb of that when we started, so we have several of those that I encourage you to use as a resource in your work. Now, the biggest work that is currently being done also for the ethics of AI is to have a normative instrument on ethics. And I guess my colleague Dorothy also reflected on that by saying, do we need a global instrument on the ethics of AI? I think we do. And actually, the member states of UNESCO agree as well on the importance of that. Of course, we will know the final decision because this is a decision that was discussed at the General Conference, which just is still taking place now. Sorry, so we will know about that, the result soon. But member countries are encouraging such an instrument, which will not only set the basic principles, but also empower and strengthen the member countries to act on these issues, build capacity through knowledge exchange. And there's a roadmap. Should this be accepted, we will start to work on, according to a certain roadmap, to develop a recommendation on the ethics of AI. I leave you with my last chart, slide. Sorry, because I spoke of global instrument. Yes, but then how does this global instrument relate to what we do in each and every region or in each and every country? And this is why I would like to tell you about an experience that we did in the Regional Bureau in Cairo to develop an ethics charter of science and technology in the Arab region that is at the same time globally, based on global principles, but driven by national and regional particularities and specificities. So we could do the same, because this could open be an umbrella for further work at the national level and at the sectoral level, including in areas of AI. So I encourage you to, we're launching, by the way, this charter tomorrow here at the World Science Forum, so you're welcome to attend that. Thank you very much.
So in view of the time, maybe I will, the floor is, I will ask the audience for questions. Is there a, there is that one, yeah, that is better.
Shall I take this? Blue shirt.
Thank you very much, excellent presentation. Susana Vidal from UNESCO Montevideo office. Just to mention, I will stand, in relation to the enormous amount of codes, declaration, and proposal of ethical principles on this issue, I would like to remark and to propose you to discuss about that it's important to take into account who is proposing ethical principles, because the first condition is the conflict of interest, and most of the private company has a code of ethical principles. If you see Telefonica, Google, Microsoft, most of them, Amazon has a code. But for this reason, and maybe because my own conflict of interest, I think that intergovernmental organizations has some independence, although also has interest influencing this discussion, is important to take into account again who is proposing ethical codes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the nice discussions. As we are discussing, I'm just thinking, actually, is Africa ready for all these things? Like, maybe from what you have known before and your experience, like, have Africa done the basics for all these things? Are we ready to reach this stage of, I'm from Nigeria. Yeah. Like, have we done all these things right that we need to take this step? Because sometimes a good thing will come, and in Africa, and maybe in my country, you will be scared that this good thing may be corrupted. Maybe an AI can be designed to work unjustly against a specific reasons or something like that.
And then the lady beside.
Thank you.
I was wondering if AI is being used to battle climate change in the region, and if so, are you happy with it, or there are some part of AI that you are a little bit concerned because it may be not be very ethical for climate change? Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Eniola Ajayi. I'm the ambassador of Nigeria to Hungary. When my brother over there spoke, I had to respond as the ambassador of Nigeria. Like you, I can understand the basis for which you spoke. At a time in my life, which wasn't too long ago, maybe in the 90s, I was thinking, would the ATM machine ever work in Nigeria? We've all been there. But it's so amazing that today, not only is the ATM machine working in Nigeria, we actually do transfers from the comfort of our phones. I think it's not right to say about my people that we would corrupt that thing. As we speak, I think AI is already being used in the health sector in Nigeria to transport using, they use drones, they use all sorts of things. And luckily, I also have the benefit of, first of all, being an optometrist and an ocular pathologist who did postgraduate research in the United Kingdom. So I'm a scientist before I became a diplomat. So I can tell you that Africa is ready. It's more than ready. Thank you.
Okay, my question is a short one. Bolanle Ojoku from Nigeria. I've been listening to talks on ethics of AI from all these different organizations and those who are also in the private sector. My concern is, I don't know if there's any deliberate effort the IAP, Inter-Academic Partnership, International Science Council, and all these bodies, is there any deliberate move in carrying our government along about these ethic issues and even advancing society, our economy with artificial intelligence? And if there is none, I think it's also necessary. I think the issue in Africa, and particularly the country I am in, I think the issue goes beyond just organizing conferences and we making decisions or deliberations. And most of these things we talk about, we don't get them implemented, you know, at the end of the day. So I think it's also important we should look into how we can carry our government along in getting many of these things implemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Jan Helge Solbakk, University of Oslo. I think we should think about artificial intelligence as a new technology, and it's impacting the whole world, the whole planet. I think I come from Norway. I think Norway is not better equipped to face this new technology than, for example, Niger, as one of the speakers mentioned, because I think every technology have some benefits and have some side effects. Also, artificial intelligence will have side effects, and some of these side effects might be irreversible, as is the case with all kinds of technologies. And for this reason, I think the global perspective is extremely important, because in face of those effects that might be irreversible, we are all in the same situation. We are all vulnerable. And for this reason, it's so important to try to develop global rules of play to handle these potential, not only potential, handle those side effects that will impact every place in this world. Thanks.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay, so I think I will just very briefly summarize, if I may, all the questions. I mean, one question broadly is Africa ready, or is any society ready for it, and which part partially got answered? I think one broad question, though, seems to be that when big private players are involved with trillion-dollar companies, which are transnational, do they really fall in the ambit of ethical scrutiny by democratic process? Do we need a global framework? How do we go about it when they say something, they have a conflict of interest, so how do we ensure that? And therefore, I think most people would think here that we do need some trans-governmental global kind of protocol to lay down some rules. So I think that seems to be one broad question that people are asking, and then now I will request the panelists to respond to both these questions.
I'll just talk very quickly about the question. I think everybody agrees that we need the rules of play. The question is who makes those rules in such a way that the entire planet actually will abide by them, right? That's the problem. We don't have a global government. And like you rightly said, yes, we could look at the UN, for example, which is probably as close as we could probably come at this time. But the UN has its own interests as well, and it's funded, right? And what would make sure that the UN comes up with rules that equally or positively affect Zimbabwe as they do the US? Well, US doesn't give you much money anymore, but whoever like your funders are. So it's a big challenge. We joke, but it's a big challenge, and I don't know what the answer is. I do know, like you said, a lot of private sector organizations are trying their best to sort of develop these principles so that will guide them as they're developing the technology. So I do say confidently, for example, AI, Google does have AI principles that were developed in closeness with organizations like the EU to make sure that whatever technologies are being developed are actually being harnessed positively. And there's a lot of teams that are actually trying to work closer with governments to adopt those principles to develop theirs. I don't know what the answer is, but I do think the private sector can lead because they better understand what the technology is capable of.
Maybe I'll just follow up on this. Is Africa ready? I think Africa is ready. But I think there is an overall landscape of initiative, for example, building science and technology capacity in Africa that is not ready on this. So we're still building capacity in science and technology in I don't want to say old-fashioned way, but in a more traditional way. And I think there is a lot of untapped opportunity, especially targeting young people and targeting startups and so on. So I think we should also have a conversation in international organization, not just on ethical principle, but actually on how we're looking at lifelong learning, at education, at capacity building, at providing opportunities. I always have this dream of like one day of when you have that extra 3 hours and print out all the different norms and ethical principle and see how they fit into each other, if it's just like copy pasting or things. Which, you know, we say repetita iuvant, it helps to repeat more than once, but we also need some harmonization. But what I found out while I was looking at these different norms is that while the big companies or the UNs or like OECD, for example, are building new principle and new list of ethics, there is a whole landscape of startups and smaller enterprises also building other lists of principle for ethics. So how do we also target that particular community? Just as a curiosity, how many of you are from startups here? Good, yeah. So it's, again, we need to make sure that we have a dialogue in this context. Just to touch briefly on the environmental and climate change issues. So my colleague mentioned the biodiversity. There's quite a lot of biodiversity conservation and environmental issues related to AI. I would like to put a caveat why it is an important instrument. I think we have to be a little bit also careful of not just thinking about environment and AI in one system. I think we really need to make sure that we preserve our naked eye also on the nature. So there's no discourse now going on ethical issue on how to approach AI and nature and environment. So I think that will be an important conversation also for another session at some point. ISC has a new action plan on the digital revolution. There are lots of projects for development. I encourage you to look at the project and let me know if you want to participate and you have no new innovative idea on how to tackle these issues in global science. Thanks.
Okay, on the issue of Africa readiness, I think it's not fear, but it's anxiety of the unknown and the feeling of we do not owe the technology. And this comes in with just the previous speaker saying that majority of the stakeholders are international companies. They're not presented by people from our region. And this plays a big role, especially when you're trying to put in public participation and inclusivity, that people need to feel they owe it. When people do not feel that, you will never be successful, whether it's in science, whichever field, be successful in trying to come up to or have set up your objectives. And for me, I feel it's the question of, is our education system ready for such disruptive technology? Is data accessible to researchers, to businesses, to relevant stakeholders? And I still stick, and I'm strongly pointing out, the lady was saying implementation. As we are trying to figure out whether we are trying to catch up and figuring out the morality and ethnical issues, is that AI is happening and technology has no border. We can't say that it is only happening, it's a global issue. It's only happening in Europe, it's only happening in Africa, it's only happening in Asia. Information is being, Africa in itself, in the concept of AI, is still being exploited in terms of data access, in terms of who's intellectual property, in terms of who's owning this type of technology. And we have to be proactive instead of reactive as a continent in terms of trying to figure out the loopholes and navigate the challenges and use this tool as an opportunity.
Thank you. I agree with much of what you said, Stephanie. Let me just say for our Nigerian brother, for those of us who work in technology, Nigeria is perhaps one of the most, and I think, Bumi, you said it, Nigeria is one of the most advanced countries in Africa when it comes to creating technology, not just consuming technology. The startup scene in Nigeria is extremely dynamic. And as Stephanie said, AI has no boundaries. There's nothing like, are you ready for AI? They are already banging on every minister's door trying to sell them a solution. Because when they go into Africa, they don't think about, is there a better way to do this? That's for us to think about and say, we don't need that solution because we have an alternative which fits our government budget better. So it's a question of policymakers also being educated. And as a colleague from Norway said, we have the same problem in Europe. The Europeans are at a serious disadvantage. They look as if they're technologically ready, but because of this continuous work in silos, they are not ready for AI, and they are totally dependent on American AI because they are afraid of Chinese AI, though I'm not sure why. Anyway, let me talk about the climate change issue. The climate change issue is an important one. What we found when I was managing the Kofi Annan Center and we had a supercomputer and we were running the climate models, we realized that the design of the climate model that we are using on the supercomputer was designed for Europe. We have, in fact, a number of models that are used for climate prediction. And so a lot more work needs to be done in Africa to develop our own models. And the thing is that when you use the model and you have this longitudinal data, luckily we had a project, we had longitudinal data for 20 years, how do you take the analysis and now translate it so that the farmer understands, I cannot grow yam on this land anymore. That historical rainfall pattern is not coming back. I have to switch to another crop. So it's also last mile issues that will, because climate change is affecting people's livelihoods. We can talk about wild animals, but I also come from a background in agric. And so I'm very much concerned about, because most of our people are farmers. That is how they live. So climate change affects their lives. And there's a lot more work we need to do. Now we have the satellite imagery and we're able to communicate to the farmers relatively rapidly. There's many good things about how artificial intelligence can be used to help people. But it needs a little more thought for us to be able to take it. And I just wanted to tell the Norwegian colleague that we have two things. We have unintended consequences, and then we have deliberately evil, you know. And we have both of these things going on. Let me talk about the health sector in Africa very quickly and say that despite the fact, for example, in my country, Ghana, we have clear protocols on how to conduct health research. People are using all kinds of technologies, plus the mobile phone, to do surveys and present without alerting individuals to their rights. Now conducting surveys using the mobile phone, then doing the kind of data analysis that you can do using AI and presenting results. So that's just bad. They know they're being bad, but they're like, oh, it's an African government. Why do you have to respect their law? So we have a lot of that kind of stuff going on, and that is why we have to engage. And I think we have two things. We have clear and present danger, and we have to figure how to deal with that clear and present danger that monopoly creates when you have just a few people who are in charge of so much. And then we have the long-term issues of how we design our society.
I would like to touch upon the issue of a global ethical instrument versus perhaps a regional or a national instrument. I truly believe that there is need for both. We know for sure it's a global issue and it needs to be to set global principles. But at the same time, we should not forget that if we only stick to the global norm, it might stay at this level. What we've done with the ethics of charter in the Arab region is not as important what's the content of that, of this ethics charter. In effect, what's more important is the process we arrived to it. Because the process we arrived through it gave ownership to the region, to the countries. They know about it now. They have a document they identify with. It's like saying that the European human rights norm is not different from the global one, but they might feel that they need to implement it. And this is, I think, the benefit of it. And there's no harm. I don't worry about homogenizing this, but this is what I would like to say. Thank you.
Okay, that's a very nice replies. Now, any other questions? Or okay, so thank you very much for this very interesting dialogue, and I guess we can close the session for today.